Hello and welcome to Masters of Our Domain, the podcast that was once about the hit 90s sitcom Seinfeld and is now about, at the moment, Spartacus Blood and Sand. I am Milo Edwards and I'm joined, as ever, by my intrepid co-hosts, Phoebe Roy and Patrick Wyman. How are we doing?
Rocking and or rolling.
That's a new one.
We've upgraded from living the dream.
I'm hot. That's my report.
Things are looking better. That's how we've moved up from another day in paradise and living the dream to rocking and or rolling. Phoebe, how hot is it there for you to say that it's hot?
It's like 28. Like it's okay. It's just a little bit sticky. It's a little bit sticky in this room.
I am in all honesty sitting here with an ice pack on my lap.
Okay.
But you know, I'm some of us have not forgotten our Pacific Northwestern roots and are horrified to be presented with things like 28 degrees. You know,
Patrick,
I didn't move here.
Don't you live in Arizona?
I do. I'd like you guys to guess what the temperature is as we record right now.
34.
It is 112 degrees today.
Okay, that's a lot hotter than 34.
What's that in like a real number?
40 something.
Oh.
Yeah.
And it's going to be 114 Fahrenheit tomorrow.
No, thank you.
So,
that really is toasty.
I rebuke it. No.
Yeah. It's so this city is a crime against God. It shouldn't exist. And you know that the way that you know that the season has turned here is when you go outside and you touch something that shouldn't burn you and it does.
Isn't that what Arizona means? Defense against God.
the place that burns you. I've also found two scorpions in my bathroom so far this year.
Doesn't it
literally mean dry zone?
This place does not want us here. And I feel like we are just, none of us are getting
it's
that
just
message.
Trying to reject you.
You have all the problems of living in Australia and yet you're stuck in America. What a fucking place.
Yeah, I was about to say, at least when I would find weird spiders in my flat in Sydney, I was in Sydney.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
So I could go beach. So it was fine.
Imagine a kangaroo-less Australia. That would suck.
Meanwhile,
I hate that.
Meanwhile, the great state of Florida is not quite as hot as Arizona, but you know, the humidity more than makes up for it. It's nice to walk through soup. It's great.
This is bad, but it's not the worst case.
No.
The worst case is 100 degrees and like 90% humidity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As they say in cards, the nut low.
And you, the listener, can say how hot it is where you are now.
That's crazy.
That's so fucking hot. They should found a new city and call it the Chill Zoner. Then maybe everyone can just go there.
That's Flagstaff.
Guys, we have guests.
The astute listener, as hot as it may be where they are, will probably have noticed that we are joined by Eleanor and Luke from We're Not So Different. How are you guys doing?
I am also hot, but you know, what's new?
It's fucking gross here. It always is. It's awful.
How many alligators have you found in your bathtub this week?
None. We don't get alligators here because we don't have the swampy condition. We don't really have the swampy conditions for it. And also, they typically are a bit further south in the state. I'm in the panhandle. And it's...
That means he's found at least 3 meth heads in his bathtub this week, though.
Fewer alligators, more meth.
We just call those friends. Like that's just...
It's beautiful.
That is also Gator, but that's his Christian name.
Starting a GoFundMe called Gatorade to get that guy some more meth.
True story. I had a great uncle. His legal name was Fluff. F-L-U-F-F.
Hell yes.
Wow.
Dudes rock.
Folks, whatever you imagine, the country backwards Southern Gothic nature with which you imagine the U.S. South, you can't outdo it. It's not possible. I know two people who are legally named Cooter.
Like, get out of town.
I swear.
Come on.
That can't be the most shocking thing you've ever heard.
No.
I swear. Anyway, yeah. Folks, the U.S. Okay. South, bad, but occasionally funny. Anyway, yeah.
I had a take recently, which is, I wonder how much Zin is cutting into Copenhagen's business.
So and much. It has to be so bad.
And I feel like we as a society are losing something important when you can just go from chewing tobacco to these little nicotine pouches. Like, it's supposed to fucking hurt. It's supposed to hurt. And chewing tobacco at least hurts a little bit.
You're supposed to feel the mouth cancer. Like, this, you're cheating.
Exactly. Yeah. This, I don't care for it. Like, we're making things too easy for the youth.
And that's why there's honor in being a meth head, you know? You're prepared to lose the teeth for the high. And that's what the Zin heads will never understand.
That's dedication.
But we're not here to talk about that. We are here to talk about Spartacus, Blood and Sand, episode 6. And this was actually one of the first episodes I've properly followed of this season.
Well done.
It felt like there was a discernible plot to this episode. So what an episode for Eleanor and Luke to come in on. We've had a lot more like weird sex stuff. That's in every episode where there's just sex in the scene.
There was weird sex stuff, but it wasn't weird enough for anyone to hang dong. And I was really mad about that. But anyway.
That was episode 5. There was a lot of dong hanging.
Okay, all right. I'm making notes.
You guys missed that one. There's a full male frontal nudity scene that goes on for quite some time in episode 5 that I'm going to go ahead and imagine. I was gone last week that Phoebe and Milo covered in some depth.
You'd hope, wouldn't you? We actually spent quite a lot of time talking about the dating game show Take Me Out.
Yeah, we did.
And that's the best of British, baby. This
you
is
weren't,
British
you
excellent.
Weren't here to keep us in line.
I keep you off your Hackney Mick, Hackney Wick. You put place names in our group chat. Like, I'm supposed to not think that that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. Like,
Listen, Patrick, I need you to understand that so much of our listenership, and we're not so different, is British or English, and like, they think it is the funniest fucking thing in the world that I can't pronounce the names of like their like insane pronunciations for towns there, and then they do that, but then we have some German listeners too, and they were like, oh, let's try it with German, and they just spell it out, and I could do it every time because it's not
German's
fucking
phonetic.
Insanity. It's insanity. You don't. It's not.
That's because German is a West Germanic language with some goddamn integrity. It's got some integrity to it. None of this French importation shit.
I mean, I'm definitely going to sound like a hick when I do it, but like, I can pronounce it, and it's not like, oh, yeah, that's actually
we can't escape who we are. Right?
Yeah,
it's just ridiculous.
What? Which ones have you had? Do you have a particularly hard time with there, Luke?
Well, they gave us a whole list the other week.
What was that list?
Where I had to like quiz him on them. I'm sure it's in our show notes somewhere. But you know, there were some. I think that there were some of the like classics in there. But then there were just also trick ones like Westward Ho. The fun of Westward Ho is that it does have an exclamation.
Now, Westward Ho is delightful. I loved Westward Ho.
But that one, I literally had to open the door and be like, Justin, it's just Westward Ho, right? And he was like, okay, what are you doing?
There is a girlfriend, just ask me for
some directions.
Yeah, there's an ancient Sporkle quiz that still exists called something like English Country Village or West Indian Cricketer. And it's so hard. Like, you're getting stuff like Terrington Barnes, and you're like, I just don't know, man.
Oh, that's too much.
I just don't know.
That's too much.
We got Wolfordus Worthy.
Oh, fuck.
Polzeth.
No.
Polzeth, whatever the fuck it is.
No, Polzeth, I actually know. Sorry, lads.
Mepham. Mepham.
That's Meowth.
Yovel. I mean, Yovel.
Yeah,
I got,
Yovel, you were correct. Yeah.
Goonhilly. Yeah. What the fuck is that?
Okay. No.
Goonhilly.
Like, no. That's just where me and my boys hang out for several hours at a time.
Where else are we supposed to go to jack off? Okay.
You're supposed to go to Little Jerking, is where you're supposed to go to jerk off, which I assume is a real place.
They've shut all the leisure centers. They've closed down all the sports fields. Where are the kids? kids men a go?
Would goon in your room like some sort of like Neanderthal? Kind of like,
yeah, it does cause some confusion for the Gooning Women's Institute, which is only so named because of where it's located.
Which I found out the hard way.
There's a village near where I grew up called Ugly.
Really? I was going to say.
How are the residents?
I don't know. I never stop.
Yeah, I got to guess that they weren't beating the charges.
No, probably not. Probably not.
It is Essex, you know. Well, it all depends. Have they gone to Turkey recently? You know, these things can change at the drop of a hat. You know?
A lot of guys with the fucking Hellraiser head in fucking Istanbul airport today, let me tell you.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good for them. You know,
what?
Maybe it's like, the implications. Yeah, got it.
You know how, like, every other airport, like, the ads in, like, the gantryway are for, like, fucking, I don't know, like, travel insurance or, like, whatever, some bullshit like that. And in Istanbul airport, it's all like, ever thought about getting a nose job?
So,
big red jets are cheap.
I went to Puerto Vallarta a few months ago, and the airport in Puerto Vallarta is just pharmacies with prescription drugs that are difficult to obtain in the United States, but sold over the counter in Mexico. So there were people just coming out of the pharmacy with bags full of pills to take on their flights with them.
Okay, so when we were in Kuala Lumpur in January, I can't stress how much my husband was wearing some random shirt he bought that was tie-dyed with like some cartoon figure on it that said Space Molly. Okay, you need to picture Blair with his newly acquired Space Molly shirt. And we were like, let's try to acquire diazepam for on the plane because it can be over the counter there. This man walks into a pharmacy and was immediately given diazepam. Okay, like your girl, the world's biggest
cutie.
Didn't
even say anything.
No, like they're just like, I know what you're fucking after. Mm. Your world's biggest cutie over here. Then it's just like, okay, well, let's try to go to multiple pharmacies and ask for diazepam. Was turned down 5 times, including after I went back to the one where they gave Blair the diazepam. And they're like, get out of here, bitch. Like, we're not giving you any. And they're like, no, we gotta hook up like this former hoon in a Space Molly shirt immediately. I've never done anything wrong. Where's my diazepam? That's all I want to know.
That's why you didn't get the diazepam.
Yeah.
If we're being honest about it.
You're pure of heart to be given the diazepam. They knew it. That was the problem.
Yeah, you didn't have a Space Molly shirt. Like, they knew you were a hobbyist. Mm-hmm. They look at Blair and they're like, it's not just a joke to him. This is a whole lifestyle.
It's like the trope in a stoner movie of the dealer looking at you, go, are you cool, man? Like you did not pass that test. I'm very sorry to be the one to tell you this.
Being like, no, no professionals.
Yeah, it's just, it's 100%. I truly, I know what everyone who has been turned away from a club feels like now.
That's a really, I'm very sorry you had to go through that. That's such a tragic story.
It's really sad.
No shirt, no shoes, no Valium. Right.
You're like, you're not coming down off that alcohol, those DTs. You're not coming down off that on our dime. No way.
Correct.
No, ma'am.
We watched an episode of Spartacus, Blood and Sand. Now, I watched this on like the world's shittest Turkish airline where like the tray table was not actually big enough to accommodate my laptop. So I had to sort of have it balanced half on there and half on my lap, which was a bit of fun. And that is, I think, the way this show should be enjoyed. Perhaps I could have CGI'd in myself some more leg room. That would have been good. Because they will, I don't know if this came across to you guys, Eleanor and Luke, but they will CGI in anything in this show. They do not care.
I got that vibe. Like, it's the real, we'll fix it in post with CGI vibe, for sure.
I had never seen this show. I had, of course, heard of it. I'd never seen it. And the, like, over-the-top, stylized slow-motion violence scenes, that like look like they're out of like a PS4 game. Just amazing. Just thank you. Thank you. And you know, I mean, just as historically accurate as things get, I'm sure Patrick can speak on it. There were plenty of, I don't know, guys being stuck in a dagger through the open mouth. I'm sure that happened all the time in Rome, apparently. Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, I have seen skeletal evidence of people being stabbed through the mouth.
Oh, I'm sure. You fight with your mouth closed. It does, in fact, happen. Got to keep your guard up.
So that's a whole thing, is when you're fighting, you actually do want to keep your jaw clenched. If your mouth is open, makes it a lot easier to suffer a concussion. If you brace your jaw on your neck, but when you have your mouth open like that and somebody hits you, you are much more likely to get knocked out.
Patrick, if you would probably be the most familiar with this. Like, it's kind of agreed upon that like every person who did battle in armor before a certain period, like, got some level of CTE, right? Like, that just seems like a CTE mm-hmm. machine. You get bonked on the head once, you're like, whoa, what? Wait, huh?
If you want to understand the Middle Ages as a period, and I'm sure Eleanor would agree with this, you need to understand that most of the people making decisions had some form of traumatic brain injury.
Yeah, I mean, it's an entire society that has been based around making sure that really dumb guys are as violent as possible, right? Mm. And so, you know, fundamentally, if you're a gladiator, you want the ones with CTE, right? Where it's like, you're going to lose your shit. You want to go kill someone. Killing someone tonight, King. Mm-hmm. So, like, really, for them, CTE is the idealized state, to be honest.
Yeah, an entire society that's like a Wetherspoons in Stoke-on-Trent.
Accurate. Yes. Yes.
It's very important to remember that you have to characterize an entire period as just people saying, "No, I'm good. Send me back out. I'm fine. I'm fine."
Got my bell rung a little bit. Oh, got my bell rung. No, no, I'm no. Okay.
You know what? You know what? You know what? You know what? Like, just give me 1 second. I can do the alphabet backwards.
Yeah, he's like, but you also have to remember these people, most of these people were illiterate. So you don't even have that one to fall back on. Like, this is, I mean, what is a great helm, but a thing for somebody to bash with your head inside? It's really giving you more CTE.
It's cool. I can name the president. Really? What's a president?
Yeah.
Imagine how barbaric you in your mind you feel that American football is, and now imagine that instead of like putting some kind of padding in that helmet and everything like that, it was just your head and your brain inside your head rattling around in a big metal jug that fit really tightly, and so your brain is just like bing 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 as you get bonked on the head or even just swing your thing around. It is, I'm surprised, like, I'll be honest, I'm surprised that a lot of them could like function to the degree that they did in public life.
Yeah, that's literally what a melee is. Yes. Right, it's just dudes bashing just each other over the head,
running into each other like a pair of goats,
and those people made most of the important decisions. These were their formative experiences. Like, you want to understand Henry VIII, I think you got to take brain damage into account. You know how many times that motherfucker fell off a horse?
When you're discussing Henry VIII, you've got to remember that from the time he was about 32, his leg was fucking rotting.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can't forget about
amazing
the
how many
leg.
Times he managed to marry with a rotting leg.
With
really.
The rotting leg.
That would be an ick for a lot of women, I think.
How many times you're able to have sex with the rotting leg? Like, what? The logistics of that thing, the logistics of that boggle my, yeah. I don't.
As Mel Brooks would put it's good to be the king.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's the plot of Crash. Right?
Yeah, that's true. That is true. To be fair.
Can I just really, really quickly? I know this is very, very off topic, but it's my favorite armor related observation that I've ever heard. Mm. I just really need to get it out before we really get our teeth into the meat of the episode. Eleanor, you'll remember this because I remember sending you a text about it because it's so funny. Long-time listeners of the show will be familiar with friend of the show, Philippa Langley, who is an amateur historian of sorts, who has Look.
Oh, is this the Richard III lady?
This is the Richard III. Right.
Yeah.
You know what? Okay. You know what?
NCP fucking, car park's greatest enemy.
Fair fucking play. Yeah, this is the thing. This is the thing. Everyone thinks like that she had this like amazing hunches, amazing stroke of intuition. But actually, she dug up so many different car parks before they found Richard III. Do you know? She's like, this woman, she's like a fucking mole. She was just like every car park. She's like, dig it up.
She's actually not that into Richard III. She just really hates car parks. And
she
girls
just
say,
hates car parks. You know? Yeah. Everyone just assumed that she's a Ricardian, but no. She is just anti-car park.
Even
she's
a stopped clock will dig up two car parks a day until it finds Richard III.
Until it finds Richard III. She listened to that Joni Mitchell song. She's like, not on my watch. Not on my watch, sister.
They paved Richard III to pub and parking lot.
La, 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 la. and one of her big things, and you know what, like, fair play on like some really, really impressive historical intuition. She did find Richard III. Like, that's fucking cool. Like,
that's crazy.
That's fucking crazy, man. But her latest thing is like, she's gone a bit, a bit overexcited with her intuition, and has come up with this theory that the princes in the tower survived the tower, and she's a big Richard III super fan. She likes him.
I cannot stress how much it really comes across like she wants to have sex with Richard III.
Widow's weeds his reinterment.
She like brought a flag when they like dug him up and draped it across him. It's just all very
draped. What she did was she goes up to this like archaeologist, like a bone girl, and says like, okay, so we need to this is a king in here, so we need to drape this, he needs his standard because that's a king.
The staff
of the NCP Leicester being forced to like turn up, form a guard of honor, like,
she's like glancing at her boss being like, do I have to put this flag on the box? And he's like, yeah, put the flag on the box. So one of her big things is that as well as wanting to defend Richard III from the charge of having murdered his nephews, she also is very keen to rehabilitate his image as being disabled, which is a little bit suspect if you ask me, because it's sort of
It's a bit eugenic, but okay.
It's a bit, a little bit. And if she is asked directly what her thinking is behind this, what her rationale is, what she comes up with is, well, if he had kyphosis, if he had like a kind of hump, sort of spread hump of the back, then how is he fitting armor over it?
Girl, he has special armor made.
He's the king. Do you think that he's like going into next? And being
also, like,
I guess, like, I don't know, like, I'm a 38.
We know what armor he had. They had it imported from the Low Countries. He had his entire household guard equipped in armor. We know this. This is an answerable question.
It's an answerable question. And she just like looks at this answerable question, sets it down politely on the floor, and says, "No, I don't think so."
I love
so
the
does
idea
she think
that
he's like, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I love the idea that armor also like specifically fits bodies exactly. I'm like, yeah, that's what cod pieces were all doing. Sure, girl. Yeah, they were all that.
You know, that was like an enormous industry in which a lot of people in the late Middle Ages made money was getting armor to fit you. Mm-hmm. Like that was a big business.
Pat, but that doesn't sound right.
Mm. Is she implying that he's some like,
we
like
have his bones.
Quasimodo
look at his
style.
She's no. She's saying
back. I'm not. I'm sorry.
She's saying,
that's not
she's
the right word. But Jesus Christ. Like,
she's
what
saying
we,
not. She's saying
she's
not.
Saying not.
That he never had any. But I mean, like, girl also is really specifically like she's suffering from the same thing that like big tech companies are, where it's like she's had one success. So it's like this is all of these new things are like her. It's like she's now Meta. And she's trying to pitch the metaverse to you. So she's like, the prince has lived. He didn't have a deformity. And it's like, no, girl, like, you, like she's
he didn't
she's
have
got
legs.
One.
We can see his
women's
spine.
Gooning
his spine.
Institute. How about that? That's my other idea. How about that?
his spine looks like a fish hook. I mean, like, that's not to say it, like, clearly it, you, like, the thing that kills me about this is we have so many sources about Richard III. Mm-hmm. Like, there's absolutely nothing that says that because you have pretty serious scoliosis, you can't be a good soldier. All the sources seem to agree that he was pretty good at that. Mm-hmm. Like, he was good at commanding soldiers. So he was good in a fight. He clearly died in a fight. Like, didn't stop him. Like, somebody knocked him over the head with a pole axe. Like, you can see the thing on his, yeah. his thing on his skull.
Well, he was remonstrating with them about their exorbitant parking charges. He was like, I've only been in there 2 minutes to nip to the chemist. 15 quid.
That you're going to have approximately 528 years of late charges.
Oh, yeah, that's the worst.
In the car park, yeah, that's that's rough.
Oh, no.
That's rough.
She's so there.
He's trying to download the app. He's like, I don't have this fucking thing.
Oh, my God. I had to use a parking app for the first time the other day. Can I just put money in a machine, please, for Christ's sake?
Like,
this,
no.
Oh my God! I'm
welcome
so
welcome to Dad Corner.
Yeah.
Me and Richard the Third shaking hands over car park charges. Yeah.
I don't think anybody's ever questioned Richard the Third's zealous prosecution of his war on overcharge fees at car parks. But you know,
this is why
that's an abundance agenda we can get.
This is why he would have given his kingdom for a horse, because you don't have to pay to park.
Yeah, there you go.
We have just solved Richard the Third, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Take that, Philippa. Okay. All right.
It's beauty of an horse. It's not got a number plate. What are they going to do? Stamp it.
Try getting you with a red light camera on that one.
Big metal boot on my horse's leg.
Could the owner of the large chestnut mare please come and move it? Otherwise, we will have it towed.
Could you imagine being shit-faced in a tavern in like 1485 and having somebody come in and be like, could somebody move that fucking chestnut mare, please?
Or just like coming out of the tavern and being like, you're not going to believe it. I've lost my fucking horse.
Yeah. I mean, think about how often that happened.
I can't remember where I parked it.
I would always recognize Daisy. How dare you? No, this could never be your girl.
These are our middle ages. So other people have other middle ages. This is our middle ages.
Right. So <Yes. laughs> this episode of Spark is...
Milo, I'm so sorry.
I'm gonna read the Wikipedia summary to refresh us all, and then we can get into what the fuck's going on here.
Sure.
As the rains fall, both Barker and Spartacus envision a future away from the Ludus. Barker expects to purchase his and Pietro's freedom. Pietro, amazing. While Spartacus dreams of escaping with his enslaved wife, Sura. Crixus, barely alive after the near-fatal fight with Theocles, is now in a drugged sleep. As part of his promotion to the new Capuan champion, Spartacus tries on new armor, and during a private lesson with the magistrate's son, Numerius, he steals a dagger for the escape. Spartacus also uses some of his winnings to buy wine and women for the gladiators to further aid the escape plan. Meanwhile, Batiatus is troubled by false news that Avidius' son still lives, and Asher sees the chance to have Barker killed to avoid paying the winnings owed to him. In the end, Batiatus keeps his word of retrieving Sura, but her reunion with Spartacus is short-lived as she quickly dies from wounds sustained in a quote-unquote bandit attack.
I gotta say that this was the most incredible part for me, because it seemed like if I was going to make a joke about what would happen... And it's like, oh no. And like, she's all stabbed up. No, like, and it's just like, do it for me, Spartacus. You know, it's just like,
remember me in a very cheesy flashback.
So I will say, as the resident defender of everything about this show, that this is
it's a hard job, but someone's going to do it.
It's and I'm going to be that guy. I'll step up. You can thank me for my service later. This is actually the moment where this show becomes substantially better. As soon as his wife is dead, this show becomes the thing it's supposed to be.
He's unleashed now. You know, it's like it's all like all those video games where you know, your wife dies and she becomes your gun arm. That's like, you know, now the plot is ready to rock.
This is John Wick. She is John Wick's dog. And not his wife.
Not his wife.
In this metaphor.
Not his wife, interestingly, because that's not what sets him off. All right.
That's not what sets John Wick off. Yeah.
He was
canonically.
He was fine. He,
yeah, that particular tragedy, he came through okay. It was the dog, the proverbial pup that broke the camel's back.
I'm thinking I'm gonna find Richard III.
instead of digging up the gun chest in his garage, he's fucking digging up every car park he can find. Like, I'm gonna find him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll tell you what, if Boban
was his expert, Richard III sniffed.
I'll tell you what, if Boban showed up in Spartacus, I would have lost my entire shit. Shout out to my favorite NBA players who show up in the John Wick movies. Thank you.
Boban Marjanovic, baby.
You know my boy.
That's what
I said.
Should we have had this many Americans on?
No,
you shouldn't
you
have.
Should
that,
not have. So
that was really turned the tables on us. Now we're hearing stuff we don't understand.
You made the same mistake that the English did back in 1915. Like, it'll be, or in 1945, it'll be fine if the Americans take over. Who cares? Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hegemon, hate to see me coming.
That's right.
Yeah. So I will just say that as soon as his wife is out of the way, this show does become substantially better, because the whole thing that makes this show worth watching was actually, I think this is one of the first episodes where you really start to see the dynamics that make it work, mm-hmm. is the conflicts between enslaved people, how the power of the Dominus kind of filters down through the household and it infects the relationships between enslaved people. That's the enslaved people in this show are not homogenous. They have agency. They're not pure victims. They can victimize each other. They can victimize free people. And this is much truer to how slavery in the ancient world actually function. Like, I think I really and truly think that this is the best show on slavery in the ancient world that's ever been made. I think it's a lot better than Rome, than the Rome series was, as far as slavery is concerned, because there slaves are objects to be acted upon. Mm-hmm. They have almost no agency in and of themselves. In this show, the enslaved people have agency. We see them making decisions. We see them doing things. We saw this in the last episode, not to go back before Luke and Eleanor's thing, with Crixus standing there making his declaration of love to his girl, while he's with the mistress of the house, while she's feeling him up. And that kind of, that is directly out of studies of American slavery, American chattel slavery, the kind of doublespeak that enslaved people do around their masters to communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much stuff to make fun of in this show, but they take very seriously the idea of enslaved people having agency, making choices, being characters in their own right with their own desires that are in conflict with each other and in conflict with what their masters want. And it shows you how sometimes their incentives align with their masters, mm-hmm. and sometimes they don't. And the Barca thing too, when he says, "It was my hands that did it," that's a deeply Roman way of understanding an enslaved person. Like, you can see in his mind in that moment, the way in which he's institutionalized, because that is what the Romans would say. They would say, my hands, your will, that you are an animate tool. Mm-hmm. That's what you are as an enslaved person in the ancient world. You are a tool that happens to speak. Mm. And so,
like the goddamn president, am I right?
Hey!
But it's like, so this stuff is, as ridiculous as the window dressing on this show is, I think it really gets at the heart of a lot of important things about how ancient slavery worked and how it affected people as an institution in a way and a way of organizing the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, Patrick, okay. I've got a question for you then.
I think that's relatively persuasive, and I'm going to let Eleanor ask a question.
How historically accurate is using orgies for subterfuge in that case?
I mean, I'm not going to go ahead and say it didn't happen, but also, you know, our sources are not great. So our access to enslaved people orgies.
They've got this kind of sticky stuff all over them. So I don't know.
No one's writing stuff down at an orgy. What are you fucking doing?
Oh, wait, I've got one.
Are you taking notes on a motherfucking orgy?
Subtorgy fuge. Mm.
That's okay.
Yeah. 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 Look. I'm just cooking. I'm just seeing what happens. All right, you know.
Is Spartacus's? This is the part that I love about this though. About this show is, yes, it's a show about Spartacus, but Spartacus is a dumbass. Like, his plan is so bad for how to escape.
His imagination of how this is going to go had me in hysterics. Like him, mm-hmm. like he's going to do this. He's going to have this big, like heroic, like fight scene where he goes through all of these people and he throws a sword and kills the guy. And then then his buddy who he's talking to, the blonde guy, is like, okay, but what about this? And so like, he just immediately changes like his plan on the fly to be like, okay, now I'm going to do this. Okay, now I'm going to take Dominus hostage and everybody's just going to let me out and not immediately stab me in the back as soon as I walk by them. Like
every new problem enables him to come up with a new epic CGI thing that he's going to do in his escape.
But I thought it was like very Guy Ritchie, all of those. Like it was like, to me, it was like watching a Guy Ritchie movie.
Like Shaun of the Dead.
But what's Shaun of the Dead playing off of too? It's playing off of Guy Ritchie. The like Edgar Wright loves to make fun of Guy Ritchie.
Intertextuality. You have to say it.
Technically a gladiator.
I think
Shaun of the Dead.
My favorite thing I think about the plan in general is that if I'm putting a bunch of sleeping aid into someone's wine, why not just try to put like poison in?
Yeah, why not just kill him?
I would just kill him. Because
Animaeus is a good guy. He's a good guy. He's the Dottore. Kill the Dottore?
You can't kill the Dottore. You cannot kill the Dottore.
Under no circumstances do you hurt Peter Mensa. Absolutely not. You leave him alone.
Peter Mensa fucking rules, yeah, man. Cool. I love the casting in this. I love it. Because there are so many guys who are just hams. They're just there to be hams. Like they just got some capital G fucking guys for this.
Big fellas.
You know, and like large lads,
you would simply love to be cast in this, right? Because it's like you just go out there, put your little skirt on, baby, and like scream at a wall. Love it.
I'm not sure I could get lean enough to make it work.
John,
All right, humble brag.
Like, I don't think I could. I'm not jacked enough. There's absolutely no chance I could.
I would not only have to go through like several surgeries, I would like have to like have a serious like tapeworm disorder thing. But yeah, it like John Hannah in this is so fun because he's just hamming it up. Like there's nothing like he's not there's no pretense to what he's doing. He's hamming it up like at the end, like he looks at Lucy Lawless and he's like, I told you I was gonna reunite him, didn't I?
He says
that like 3 feet from Spartacus, like within like easy earshot, and Spartacus is like, my beautiful wife, no, to hear him be like, ha ha, look, I killed his wife. Ha,
gotcha, bitch.
I got you, motherfucker.
How much do I fucking love to see Lucy Lawless though? You know, my God. I just love her so much. Like she's an inspiration to tall girls everywhere. Like so important for tall girl representation is our Lucy. It's like her and Gwendolyn Christie. They're like to mm-hmm. us, these are the most important women that we must protect at all costs because we need them out in the world just showing that we simply exist, you know?
So we have discussed many times over the course of this show, the MILF stereotypes and MILF categorization. And
towards
Lucy
the taxonomy
Wallace
of MILFs, yes,
yeah,
yes.
We have done a lot of MILF taxonomy. Lucy Lawless in this just peak. It does not get any better than Lucy Lawless in this. She is a goddess. Mm. She also knows exactly what show she's in.
Yes.
She and John Hannah know exactly what show they're in and exactly what they're doing. And it works. It works so well for me. I can understand if it doesn't for you. Milo, you look disgusted.
No, they're my favorite bit. The bit where she's like, yeah, just shag that slave girl while you explain it to me. And she's like, she's in the bath being like rubbed down by these other ladies. Yeah. And he's just like banging this other girl from behind while they have an otherwise normal conversation about like their various plans and subterfuges. Like, this is an insane show.
Okay, so, like, it's illegal for girls to have hobbies. Okay, all right.
I love that the woman he's fucking, like, there is no attempt to make her look like she is enjoying it. Like the look on her face is like, oh God, please, this has to end. Like this is what, why? Oh my God, this is awful.
So that's the whole, that is central to how this show does what it does and what makes it worth watching. Because you could have done that scene without ever putting in that close up on her face. Right.
Yeah.
You could have done this scene with focusing entirely on him or focusing entirely on John Hannah and Lucy Lawless. And she's essentially a prop there, but they don't do that. They give you a solid few seconds of really uncomfortable close up on her reaction to what's happening there. Mm. And that's, I think you have to view that as that is an intentional decision that they make in this show to look at how the enslaved people are responding to what's being done to them. Mm. Mm. And because if we think about where this show is going, we know what's eventually going to happen here, right? And it builds very slowly and very deliberately to show you the thousands of indignities that pile up to get enslaved people into an open rebellion. And so those little moments, which we'll get more of as this series progresses, they are intentionally building them. And they are intentionally showing us like what these relationships actually are, how exploitative they are, how cruel, how inherently cruel they are, how inherently cruel the masters are, and how that is baked into the entire society that they're a part of. Mm. Like it takes this seriously. Like this stuff is not an add-on to like a fantastical view of Rome. It's like, what if this world was actually just brutally exploitative and had deadly consequences for the people who were exposed to that so that others can rise? Like the whole contrast in this show is between Badiatis and Lucy Lawless and the enslaved people. They're showing them up as a mirror to one another and how the master of the Ludus is quite literally profiting off of the blood of these people and what kind of person that makes you. Mm. Like, it takes seriously the idea you have a guy who makes his living off of the blood and toil of his dudes. And what does that mean for you as a person? It means you fucking suck.
Yeah.
It means you're a bad person.
Yeah. And I actually really liked this because for me, one of the big things that drives me absolutely fucking insane about the way that people relate to like Rome or like the gladiatorial sport in general is that like, oh, isn't it all just like a bit of fun and isn't it cool? And it's like, no, it isn't. Like, I mean, this is bloody. It's kind of disgusting. And we reify these people in this way that completely lets them off the hook for their incredible inhumanity. And it's kind of nice to see that called out in a show. Whether or not audiences are going to quite understand that, one can't really tell. You know, like, I don't know that so many people, like, ever watched Gladiator and then thought, this is bad. Like, I think they mostly took away, like, I am entertained. Thanks, Russ. You know, like, it's, you know. But I like to see it tried again. Mm.
That's the best thing about a subversive text, though, is that not everybody's going to get it. I mean, the first time I read the Aeneid, the instructor I had for that course had done had translated the Aeneid for Penguin Classics or whatever, but he had us read it as a subversive text, and which is not the usual way to read the Aeneid. Usually you read the Aeneid as kind of pro-Augustan propaganda. Reading it as a subversive text, it's like, wow, there's a lot in there that he is not happy about, that he thinks is bad. They're like cultural pathologies, political pathologies. Like, you can see the critique when you follow it, but the vast majority of people who ever read the Aeneid were not gonna see that, or at least weren't gonna focus on it, even if they did notice it. And shows like this, is obviously gonna get more explicit, but you could watch the first six episodes of this series or so and never really notice how bad things are. And how bad and exploitative and nasty this relationship really is. And that's one of the things I appreciate about it, honestly, is you get to see like, this is fucking corrosive. This is a bad way of setting things up. It's bad for everyone. And the people who benefit from it are bad people. Like, Badiatis is a bad guy.
I do have a little bit of a counter. Like, I do accept what you're saying, but I do have a little bit of a counter, which is fine. I do think that they take pretty seriously the exploitative the exploitative nature of the flesh trade relationship. If you treat humans as objects, then that is a kind of one sort of one way direction of travel when it comes to exploitation. But the fact that there is this absolute, not just sexist, but like deeply boring and deeply old and played narrative device of something terrible happening to a woman in order to drive the narrative of the man who loved her, I find it a little bit hard to take too seriously the idea that this is a show that takes exploitation 100% seriously. It takes the exploitation of the men seriously. Fine, I'll go along with that. But there are not very many female characters.
You don't say.
In this show.
Wow.
And we don't even have a proper conniving Slag. Lucy Lawless, beautiful and statuesque though she may be, she's not really doing any conniving. She's no Attia.
Conniving.
She's 100% conniving. What is she doing with Alithia? With Alithia, if not conniving?
Oh, come on.
That a conniving
that's
Slag.
I agree,
strumpet is a bit two-faced.
She's a sounding board. She's a bit untrustworthy. She's not conniving.
A sounding Slag.
She's a sounding Slag.
No.
She's a sounding broad. That's very good.
I'm going to mediate the situation. I have never seen any of this show before, so I'm going to step in and I'm going to say that while I think Phoebe makes a lot of good points about this and about the exploitation of women and how that's bad and everything and how we shouldn't do that and how this show is very clearly doing exploitation of women and sex position, which, by the way, I'm fine with sex position as long as we're hanging dong as well as everything else.
Yeah,
but
gotta be dong.
Thank you, Luke.
But sex position, or as I call it, missionary. The 3 minutes, baby.
Hey, what, you want longer? Right? So let's not be.
However,
crazy
I must
here.
Come down on the side of Patrick because I have long held a candle for Lucy Lawless. She is in the pantheon of women that young Luke was immediately drawn to. It was her and Carrie Fisher and Laura Dern in Jurassic Park. So unfortunately, I
great
side
yeah,
with,
okay.
great trifecta. With Patrick here. But
I'm not saying she's not a MILF. I'm saying she's not a conniving MILF.
That's fine. Okay, you're not that getting, I can't argue.
Okay,
with.
But I mean, can someone truly be a MILF if they don't connive? Like, I mean,
yes, she's
what?
Lucy
what is your bar for conniving? My
connive.
Goodness.
I have to be at least willing to drive 10 minutes, okay, while their husband is at the office, right? So that's a form of coniferation.
Phoebe, this is the maddest I have ever been. She may not have connived yet, but she very soon she's going to be wheels within wheels conniving in this show. So maybe I'm just reading the future.
She's a conniver pillar.
She just takes a little while to warm up.
She has a beautiful butter connive.
She has yet to emerge from the chrysalis.
It just takes her a little while to warm up, but once she gets there, you know, she's right at the top, you know.
Conniving with the best of them.
Okay, fine. Let's put a pin in that. I have another observation, and I think that the imagined Shaun of the Dead style, this is how my plan is going to work. I think that's supposed to be funny. I think that's like supposed to be like almost like a kind of 30 Rock cutaway.
Yeah.
Right.
I
okay.
That's like that. I think that's the reference and that's the analogy. But there's a real sense of like of a secondary school teacher doing a rehearsed joke,
yes. mm-hmm.
which doesn't quite land, and they think, fuck that, I'm not fucking doing that again. No more jokes ever again. Because it immediately after this scene where he's like going, yeah, and then we'll do this, and then we'll do that. Immediately after, they're like, you know what, jokes, they're just not really, it's not, but like we tried it. We can't say we didn't try it. Like that we had this one guy in the writer's room that day. He was wearing a comedy hat. He had a rubber chicken. And we let him write a scene. And this is what happens. It doesn't work. So let's just, can we just go back to the po-facedness, please? just po-faced, po-faced. Like, I do think it's boring that it was so obvious that that what sets him onto the trajectory of becoming the leader of the slave rebellion is obviously going to be his wife dying. And not only do I find that boring, do I find that offensive, but it also makes it impossible to connect to at least a significant part of the emotional heart of the show, because you know what's going to happen. Every time he talks about his wife, every time he fantasizes about his wife, every time his wife is mentioned, I'm like, I don't give a shit. She's already in the fridge. As far as I'm concerned, this bitch is in the fridge. I don't care. I cannot get interested in you and your wife, because as soon as you reunite, something terrible is going to happen to her.
Ah, my alive wife. Can't wait to see my alive, breathing wife.
I have to say, probably my favorite thing about my wife is that she's alive. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that Spartacus doesn't say to her, God, you're so beautiful. I may as well say goodbye to you right now, because there's no point in me loving you, because you're going to fucking die.
This is the great structural weakness of this show as a whole, is that it's this inciting is? Incident.
Okay, interesting.
Yes, yes. When you get the wife storyline is absolutely the weakest part of this show. The acting is fucking terrible, right? When it comes, I don't buy them as anything other than fuck buddies. I'm sorry.
They could have just CGI'd the wife in.
Yeah, put her in post.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, they could have had her on the moon.
It's true. They don't have chemistry, like, do they? Like, with this, it doesn't. I'm like, okay. And granted, I was like, well, maybe this is just because I'm coming in at a weird point in time. No, but
not why.
And honestly, God bless him. So there's a really sad story here that we'll get to as this season goes on. But like, the actor who plays Spartacus in the first season, they were getting ready to shoot the second season of it, and they found out that he had cancer, and he died of terminal cancer in between the first and second seasons of this show. So they replaced him with another actor who is not nearly as jacked, which is a huge downside as far as I'm concerned. I'd like a beefier Spartacus, but he is a substantially better actor at portraying emotional range. Okay. And so, like, in some ways that helps this eventually become a better show, is that they replaced the guy he's good. Yeah, he's like fine as a action guy, but when you're asking him to do emotional things, it's clear he's not quite operating with the full deck.
But I mean, there's an issue with the emotional heart of every single aspect of the show. Like Varro, like fucking NSYNC over there.
Get like, out of town.
Chunky NSYNC over there.
Chunky?
He's chunkier than they were in NSYNC. I'm just talking in relative terms.
He's in great shape. What kind of body standards are we holding this man to?
You know, like a little twinks.
There's nothing wrong with being chunky. Second, I mean,
he has visible abs.
I love how upset Patrick is. I mean,
visible abs. Jesus. What are they but a series of muscular chunks?
Look, we're talking about twink death here, Patrick. And if you can't get involved, I don't know. I don't know what to say to you. Okay,
get in or get out. That's my position.
Phoebe is just throwing high heat today. My goodness.
We know that Varro is going to die.
Yes,
because he is Spartacus's best friend. They hung out. They ate bread together. He keeps talking about how he put himself into slavery in order to get money for his wife. Like, he may as well paint a big target on his head. He may as well dress himself up as a fucking deer and go wandering in the woods in Wisconsin in hunting season. That is how dead this guy is gonna be.
I like how your description of their friendship makes them sound like pigeons. They're hanging out.
They're hanging out
bread together,
bread.
You know, things of this nature. Yeah,
like
occasionally wearing bright plumage. Like,
honestly, like, that is the kind of friendship I aspire to. Is the friendship among pigeons. I want to get together with my friends, and I want to just fucking ruin someone's enjoyment of Trafalgar Square.
Yes.
That's what I want to do.
Yes,
that's what I want to do.
This is like a noble London pastime. You know, splash.
I want to just like inhabit St. Mark's Square.
Yeah.
Like, people want to look at that statue. They can't, because we have shat on it. That's what I want to do with my friend.
I want to splash in a puddle. Yeah. I want to inconvenience some tourists.
Yeah. I want to like get like big and puffy, and I want to strut with my friends. Mm. So this is what Spartacus is doing. He's with his pigeon pal. So we know that this guy's going to die. We know he is. We don't know how, but we do know that he is going to die. We know that his wife is going to die. As soon as we are, for some reason, introduced out of nowhere to this charming gay couple who have this plan to buy their freedom and be out of the looters, the second his little boyfriend shows up, I'm like, wow, you're gonna fucking die. Yeah. And because that is all so predictable, there's no point in accessing any emotional connection to any of it. They need to make it a little bit less obvious. Sometimes they've got to show someone who has this kind of like, you know, this kind of sympathetic backstory, and maybe have them like not die. Mm.
So here's where I'm going to disagree with you. If they were going to do that, they would be making a much different show. Fine. This show is, with rare exceptions, about as subtle as a goddamn sledgehammer.
Yes.
And if you were to try to put in some really deeply sensitive, unexpected emotional plot lines, I think the whole thing would fall apart under its own weight.
But then why try and put the plot lines in like in at all? Like with Crixus, and the slave girl, I'm literally watching the scenes being like, I don't care. Why are you telling me? Something awful's gonna happen to one of them.
Because we know that all of these people are gonna die, but that's tragedy. That's the nature of tragedy as a genre, is that we all know it's going to turn out poorly in some way, shape, or form for all of them. And the question is, what is transformed as a result of the bad things that we know are going to happen to these people?
I don't like it when things are
bad. So you get Phoebe. Okay. To the title of today's episode, Phoebe has beef with the genre of tragedy.
I do.
Take it up with fucking Aeschylus, man.
How about making it a bit lighthearted? This is the thing. Like,
How about making it a bit lighthearted?
Like, this is why I got sacked as Aeschylus's script editor.
I have to say,
saying, like, you know, you could put a punchline in here, man.
John Hannah and Lucy Lawless are in Carry On Spartacus. It's just that no one else is.
Yeah, every
scene with them, you could replace half the lines of dialogue with misses, and it would be exactly the same.
So something that I'm quite enjoying about both Spartacus, both John Hannah and Lucy Lawless, is they're both still doing this like Shakespearean delivery, and everybody else is just doing Australian delivery, which is very, very funny. Because they
to be
keep,
or
like,
not to be, can't.
Yeah, everyone's either to be or not to be cunting over there.
Is this a vape I see before me?
G'day there, Dominus.
Yeah. Aperture towards my mouth.
You guys have fucking broken me. This happens every episode. Mm. Every episode. Phoebe and Milo and I record together. There comes a point at which I'm just broken. And that was the point in today's episode.
Australian Shakespeare
as delivered through Spartacus.
I love it.
Slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. Arrows mean something fucking weird in Australian slang.
It's like
we don't
popper.
Know what.
It's like a variant of poppers or something. That's my understanding.
Oh, I used to drive an arrow. You know, something of the same nature. <Yeah. laughs>
Once more under the beach, dear friends. Once more.
Yeah. It's actually what Australians call Arizona.
Probably. You know.
I did know a lovely couple that lived from Australia that lived in Arizona that moved back to Australia a couple of years ago. We knew their kids. They were lovely. They went to my kids' school. Left Arizona to go back to Australia because they're like, the weather's nicer there.
It's true.
I'm like, this is true. Yeah. But the contrast struck me for a moment. I'm like, you're going back that place. That's better. I'm not saying you're wrong, but man, that's rough for me.
Yeah.
That's a rough spot to be in.
Look, you know, no, if someone in Arizona offers you a golden gay time, it's going to be a lot different to when someone in Australia does. That's all I'm saying. So
that's 100% true. Yeah. The one thing I will say for Arizona is that because of our lax firearms regulations, you really could just make a technical here. Like that's entirely viable and legal. Like there's absolutely zero reason why this place should not just be filled with Hiluxes with guns.
Which ironically would appeal to the Australian love of the Ute.
You know. Look, this. I'm just saying there's some cultural overlap. Did you know there are feral camels in Arizona?
I did know that.
There are in Australia as well. So there you go.
Yep.
There you go. Yep. Arizona, the Australia of America.
There
that's,
you go.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. Yeah.
A feral camel is what I call a Lucy.
Oh, sweet Christ.
Get out of town.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Right. Look,
it does just about tear, but I do have like one more observation, which is just a small observation. It's a small observation, and it's an observation that I'm making while I try to think of a Shakespearean pun on Ute. So far, got nothing. No.
I'm not fast enough. I was like, no, like you could see the little wheels in my poor brain trying to like come up with something, and it was too good, Phoebe. Sorry. Like, you know, this is the equivalent of, you know, I'm like a rookie batsman and, you know, you just come up and throw a fastball and it went right by my
and
fucking
you're just
head.
Like, I'm trying. I'll see if I can come up with anything. And I think this is like quite an important observation, which is up until last week when Batiatas has one of like his rival's entire family killed, including, as it turns out, an angelic child. Batiatas is like fun evil up until this point. He's like, he's doing like evil horseplay. He's a climber, he's a grasper, he wants to be the big swinging dick of Capua. That's what Batiatas is up to. And then for some reason around episode 5, they're like, no, we're going to have to make him like, at the moment, things are the gradient. It's a little mild. We need to step this up. We need to make him actually evil. And so now, basically out of nowhere, he is actually evil. And I think that's fun.
Okay. I'm once again going to disagree with you.
Oh, and come on, man.
Because you're literally just describing a character arc. You're just describing the process by which someone changes and grows into themselves over the course of time.
But this is not a character arc. This is a fucking character cliff drop. This does this.
I'm not saying it couldn't have been paced better. Okay. But it is just
that a lot.
It's a character pogo stick. Okay. Look, I don't know what you want.
You're about to hear an explanation if you get a character arc, you know what I'm saying?
They've been foreshadowing it throughout the entire series. Is he does things that are increasingly bad. We see him cheating people. We see him sending Spartacus to the pits is the kind of thing that a bad person does, because what's his logic? Well, I'm going to recoup my investment by sending him to the place where he fights the guy who cuts people's faces off. Like if you can, the only thing that changes here, and this is why it doesn't bother me, and I think it fits neatly into a character arc, is because prior to this we have seen him do violence to people who are below him on the social scale. When we have watched him do horrendous things already over the course of this series to people, it's just that he hasn't done it to people who are living in a villa who have an angelic child. We've seen him do it to his social inferiors. And that's what's meant. I think that's what is supposed to be transgressive about the act, but the seeds of it are there all along in him, because he is a grasper, because he does have an inflated sense of his own importance, because he feels like his own person is being threatened. And what gets him, again, think back to the inciting event for his murder spree of Ovidius, is that the guy sent slaves to kill him. The idea that common slaves would put their hands on him and try to kill him, that's what sets him off about it. It's not the attempt on his life. It's the idea that he is being disrespected by having slaves sent to kill him is what sets him off down this path. And I think that is consonant with the characters we've been led to understand him. If we think about how he relates to people who are below him, the violence that he does to them, and think about, too, the way that he does violence to people. It's him beating up people who can't fight back. It's him putting people in a position where he can wield the knife over them at the end, but not actually do the dirty work of it. And I think, at least to me, it makes sense as a character development that we see somebody who's so obsessed with his own position and his own importance that he's willing to do increasingly fucked up stuff because this is who he is and it's who he's always been. It's just now he's directing it at socially unacceptable targets.
Okay, that's fair. I do have one more thing to say and then we can go.
All right.
As you'd like it.
Okay, now we're cooking. Yeah. All right, thank
that's
you.
That's the good shit.
That's the good stuff. Hook that shit to my veins. Absolutely. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Phoebe, I love arguing with you about this show. I love it. I love having to defend this absolute sack of shit.
It can never be your girl, all right? Although I have to say, I really enjoy Phoebe's like, yeah, I know it's supposed to be a tragedy, but what if it was built different? You know?
Yeah. A ute, my kingdom for a ute. Now, that is the end of the episode. This has been a free one. We have a Patreon. You can subscribe to it. You get twice as much of this. Eleanor and Luke, do you have anything you would like to plug?
Do we fucking ever, friends? Not only can you listen to our bullshit regularly on our own podcast, We're Not So Different, but right now we have got a 10-part series with our homies, Derek and Dan from over at the American Prestige, about the First Crusade. It's called Welcome to the Crusades. You can find it at welcometothecrusades.com. The first two episodes we've got out for free right now on our feed, so you can check out We're Not So Different wherever you get podcasts and get those too. But for the next 2 weeks, the additional episodes, of which there are like fucking 9 because we're insane people, are only $8. they're going to go up to 10 after that. But listen, if you want to find out why Crusaders are weird losers so that you can laugh at people like Pete Hegseth with his little Deus Vult tattoo more effectively, baby, we got you covered. Like, this is essentially an entire lecture series that you can get. So we got fucking reading lists. We got the whole shebang. So do check it out. That's our whole deal right now.
Oh my God. You can, and must.
Do you guys discuss the pure hilarity of the Crusade of Nicopolis?
We haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, we're still mired in the first. So we're hoping to see if this does well enough. If this does babe, the way I'm eventually going to get on to Richard the Lionheart trying to have sex with Saladin, if enough people listen to this shit, you know. Mm. So,
oh my God. I sincerely hope you get there because the Crusades are just an endless well of funny shit. The Templars all getting killed in Damietta. During the just riding into an urban area on their horses and just throwing stuff at it.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's like the Crusades are. I'm so glad that you guys are doing this because the Crusades are just funny. They're like they're tragic, obviously, but there's so much concentrated stupidity in them that you will never find better expressions of the mindset of medieval European nobles than crusading, where it's like, well, we don't really know anything about this place, but what if we all just walked?
Guys with CTE.
Guys with CTE hours.
It's an entire society run by people with CTE. What would that look like? Well, we know.
Yeah.
We know. Right. Well, that is it. That is it from us. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week on the bonus feed. Cheers, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Much a ute about nothing. There we go.
We are.